from Ringler, this is Ringler Radio, a podcast where we keep you current on the latest news from the settlement industry, updates on nationwide litigation, trends in the legal and insurance industries, and everything in between. Ringler has been helping injured people and their families since 1975. So when it comes to objective settlement solutions, the consultants at Ringler are your go-to experts.
Welcome back, friends, to another episode of Ringler Radio. I'm your host, Matt Ross. Medicare is the topic of the day, and boy, do we have an update for you. On October 11th, 2023, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, also known as CMS, announced updates to their Medicare civil money penalties that has sent the Medicare compliance industry into a flurry of discussion and activity. We asked our resident expert, Greg Bashaw from CP Resolutions, to help us make sense of it. Let's listen in. Greg Bashaw, welcome back to Ringler Radio. Great to have you again, my friend.
Hello, Matt. It's always good to be here. Glad to be back.
Excellent. Well, today we're going to be diving in more on Medicare. You are our Medicare expert. We talked a lot about it last time. We're going to talk more about it this time. So today we're reviewing the updates to the Medicare civil money penalties. And so if you could give our audience a quick background on what that is, how it came about, and maybe some legal context too, because there's been some changes just even within the last couple months.
Well, that's exactly right, man. So Medicare civil money penalties is the hot topic in Medicare compliance out there right now. Actually, it's a settlement, if there could be a hot topic. And so I want to give a little bit of background, like you said, about where this comes from and why it matters. So the original law, Medicare Secondary Payer Law, was passed way back in 1980. That's the law that established the fact that Medicare pays last, or if they do happen to pay first, that they get reimbursed by the primary payer, the payer that's supposed to be paying. And for many, many years, they didn't really enforce that law, their rights under that law. They had a hard time figuring out how to do that. So fast forward to 2007, and they passed another related law to help enforce their rights under the Medicare Secondary Payer Act. That was the law in 2007 that established the obligation of these primary payers to report all of their claims that involve Medicare beneficiaries to Medicare. And the analogy I like to use is kind of like taxes and tax returns. You submit your tax returns so the IRS knows how much you owe. And the Medicare wanted these companies, these self-insured entities, these TPAs, to submit their report of all the claims involving Medicare beneficiaries so they knew where to look to be reimbursed and get their money paid back to them.
And Greg, if I'm not mistaken, this is called Section 111 reporting, right? This is what everyone talks about, right?
That's exactly right. So it's called Section 111 reporting. That's the way it's kind of referred to in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so that Medicare Section 111 reporting, there was a part of that law that really got everybody's attention and got these companies, to obey that law, to follow that law. There was a section of that law that basically said, if you don't report your claims involving Medicare beneficiaries, we have the right to penalize you up to $1,000 per claim per day for those things that you report incorrectly.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. And it got their attention. And I would say as a result of that, these reporting entities, they began reporting. So they did what they needed to do. They licensed software. They put together systems so that they could report all those claims that involve Medicare beneficiaries to Medicare. And it really changed things. It gave Medicare the ability now to enforce their rights under that Medicare Secondary Payer Law to be reimbursed in the times where they should be reimbursed. And companies did comply. Now, the thing is that was passed in 2007. All the way up until today, January 11th, 2024, Medicare has never imposed one of those penalties. Hmm. It's never, to my knowledge, happened. And the reason it's never happened is Medicare had to learn how that would work. They had to learn the industry. I think they had to learn how this reporting would work. They had to learn when it would be right and when it wouldn't make sense to impose a penalty for problems with reporting. And so finally, in fact, for years and years, people thought they had forgotten it. Finally, though, as a
surprise. Well, yeah, it's a 17-year ramp-up period, essentially. I mean, I wish I had that for any new thing that I was learning.
But you know what? I respect that because I think they took it carefully and they tried to do this right. So again, fast forward, short version, February 2020, they come out with a proposed rule about penalties that surprised people, that shocked people. They asked for feedback on that rule. They got the feedback. And then finally, in October of last year, they published the final rule regarding civil money penalties. And this is where it becomes real. This is they published the final rule. It's a rule. It's a regulation that really defines in some detail exactly when and how much Medicare is going to penalize these reporting entities, these entities that are responsible for reporting. Medicare calls them responsible reporting entities. how they're going to be penalized for noncompliance with those reporting laws.
Okay, so let's deconstruct it a bit for our listeners. Walk us through the timeline here, because they've implemented something. It's probably going to take a minute to be effective, and then the penalties come in. I mean, walk us through kind of what that looks like from a timetable standpoint.
You bet. So the rule was published on October 11th, 2023. So last year.
Okay.
The rule became law on December 11th, 2023. So last month.
Okay.
It will become applicable beginning October 11th, 2024 of this year.
Okay. So 1 year. You got a year.
Yeah. So 1 year after that, it will become applicable. And then one other thing is we were recently at a conference and one of the CMS representatives says they will not impose their first penalty until October of 2025.
Okay. And so, now, does this apply to all reporting, mishaps from before? Is it only looking forward? What does it apply
to? That's a good question. And it's a worry by a lot of these responsible reporting entities is because they have reporting skeletons in their closet from the past. One of the things that Medicare has been very clear about is that this final rule will only have prospective applicability. So it'll only be applied on a going forward.
Basis. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's one reason they won't impose their first penalty until October of 2025 is that that has that. And so that one and essentially 2 year delay, but really, I think it's smart to think of it as October of this year. Is that you have time if you've had issues in the past in reporting, if you've had you've got time to fix them. You have time to get your ducks in order and be ready. So when the applicability date hits in October 2024, you've got it all together.
So even if someone does everything they need to do by October 11th of 2024 this year, are there any exceptions that Medicare will still consider if something happens outside their control?
Sure. So, well, let me tell you when they would impose a penalty. And you're right. There are some exceptions to those times when they would impose a penalty. So I think Medicare's, they've gone out of their way to try to make it very simple in defining when a penalty could be imposed, when a claim that is reported is penalizable. And so what they've said is that a CMP can be imposed when, and I'm reading this, it's of their words, CMS identifies a new beneficiary record, so a record that has been reported, that was not reported in a timely manner. So it's only timeliness or lack of timeliness that makes a reported record penalizable.
So what's a timely timely record reporting?
So they define timeliness as within 1 year. So let's say you had what they call a reporting event. So we'll get back to that. Or maybe I'm calling a reporting event, but you had this reporting event that happens today, January 11th, 2024. Well, it would then, under this rule, become untimely reported on January 11th, 2025. So you basically have to report within 364 days to be timely. And then that 365th day, it becomes untimely. And now the next question is, what's a reporting event? You know, what are those events? And so there are really two. And so one is what Medicare calls a TPOC. And a TPOC is, in most cases, it's a settlement, or it could be a judgment or other kind of payment. But in most cases, we're talking about a settlement. Okay. So the first reporting event where you have to report within a year of that reporting event is that settlement date. And Medicare defines settlement date. It's usually the date that the release is signed for that settlement, but it's within a year of that TPOC date. So that's one area of timeliness you need to be aware of. Okay. The second area is within 1 year of what Medicare calls ORM assumption. And ORM, it's just all terminology, but ORM stands for ongoing responsibility for medicals. That applies to, for example, workers' comp cases or PIP claims or medical payments that that a company is making under one of those policies. Those are reported at the beginning. So those TPOCs are reported at the end, you know, at settlement, because you really don't know what that settlement's going to be until you settle it. Mm-hmm. But with these workers' comp claims, PIP claims, medical payments claims, those are reported at the beginning. And
all right. So sorry, real fast. I just want to make sure I understand. So we have, it kind of depends on your line of business of the claim. So workers' comp, no fault. It's when it's from the beginning, because that's when they're responsible for making those payments for medical. But for something, say, like a liability case, you have a third party accident, trucking accident, what have you. It happens at the end because you don't really know what that responsibility is until everything's finalized in the settlement documents.
Exactly. Yes? Right. Okay. Exactly right. And just so everybody knows, that Medicare is defining that ORM assumption date as the date of incident for those workers' comp cases, those PIP cases, and those no-fault cases.
Okay.
So
it's not even first notice of loss. It's the incident date.
It's the date of incident.
Yep, yeah. Okay.
Exactly, for those. All right. Got a year to do that. Now, you asked earlier if there are some exceptions to that. So if there are some exceptions to those basic rules, and there are. So in other words, you could report something in an untimely way, but if one of these other things happen, that can be an affirmative defense against being penalized for that. And so one reason for that, one affirmative defense that you could make, is that you have a tech issue beyond your control. So if you're not able to report, let's say a tornado rips through your data center and you're not able to report, or who knows? It was funny. I was at a conference. Somebody asked, "What if we're really bad at tech?" And they said, "That is not a tech issue."
That's a personnel issue. Yeah, get new people, exactly. Right? Yeah.
So that would be an affirmative defense. That we were down. We couldn't do it. Whatever.
Okay.
A second defense that you could make is that CMS or a CMS contractor made an error. Makes sense.
That makes sense.
A third, and this comes up, is that if you have lack of cooperation by a Medicare beneficiary in providing the necessary reporting information, and that's just a long-winded way of saying you sometimes have claimants who don't want to give you their Social Security
number. Yeah, you're getting stonewalled.
They're like, I don't want to give it to you. I don't trust you. I'm not going to give it to you. And now what Medicare does is they say, if you do certain things in those cases where they don't give you that information, you can create for yourself a safe harbor. If you can show that you've made a good faith effort to gather that information, and then they specifically define what constitutes a good faith effort. And so that good faith effort means that you make three attempts. One attempt can be by phone, email, mail, or other reasonable means. Text could work. And then the other two can be by mail or email, and you have to record those.
Okay.
And if you record that you made those three attempts, you can say, hey, I tried. And and they added this in the final rule. They said that if you have an unambiguous written refusal by the claimant, I'm not going to give you my Social Security number. You get that in writing. You're done. You don't have to make any additional attempts.
So keep your receipts. Make sure you contact them. And if you get a buzz off, then in writing, then you're good. essentially. Yep, those are your get out of jail free cards. Okay. All right. That makes sense. So if we could, did you have one other point? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was going to talk about just how the penalties would be calculated. So that
Actually, that was my next question. So how would these penalties be calculated?
Great question. So the penalties will be calculated on a per day basis per the statute. And here's what they said. They said it'll be $250 per day per claim that is reported in an untimely way for 1 year or more late, but less than 2 years. And that's adjusted for inflation. So inflation has gone up since 2007. And so the inflation
a little bit.
Yeah. So the inflation multiplier is 1.428. So you take that $250 times 1.428, and then you get that actual per day amount. For 2 years or more, it's $500 a day. But less than 3 years, and then 3 years or more, it's $1,000 per day, up to a maximum penalty of $365,000 adjusted for inflation. So, and if you multiply 365 times 1.428, it's over $500,000.
That's a lot. Yeah. So basically, what they're saying is there's been 48% of inflation between 2007 and present day. Current calculation.
No, that's a podcast all in itself.
It is. We don't have time to get into that. But that, okay. So are there any other calculations that come to that?
Well, I think one other thing that your audience should know, that's the bad news. The bad news is a potential penalty can be really significant and harsh. The good news is it will be very rare that a company will be penalized. And here's why. The way that a penalty will be found is through a human audit. And Medicare has said that each quarter, they will only be auditing 250 records across all responsible reporting entities per quarter. And so, in other words, if you're a small company, the odds of one of your claims being audited is rare. And they're only going to audit one of the claims that you submit. I mean, they're not picking 250 responsible reporting entities each quarter. It's just one record randomly selected each quarter, if that makes sense.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then if they do pick one, it has to be one of the ones that you reported that was late, that was untimely. So I think a very small percentage of what responsible reporting entities report are going to be untimely. The vast majority are going to be timely. So the bad news is, the good news is it's going to be rare that you get caught reporting something untimely. The bad news is if you do get caught, it can be expensive. And
the satirical part of my brain is basically saying, all right, if you so happen to be so lucky to get one case picked that actually qualifies for a penalty, you should at the same time go out and buy a lotto ticket because the odds sound like to be the same. So your luck could be as good and bad on that day.
Well, here's
a needle in the haystack.
Here's an interesting data point, though. They told us that if this penalty had been in place in 2022, if these rules had been in place in 2022, that they would have imposed during that year $42.4 million in penalties.
Whoa.
So even though the odds of getting caught are low, it's not zero. And 42.4 million in the scheme of things is not a gigantic number, but it's not zero.
Fair enough.
And so there you go. So that's
the rule. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if we could sum all this up, because we are at time for our particular episode this week. What is the number one takeaway that our listeners need to understand as we wrap up this conversation? Or two. You can have two things.
So my takeaway would be this. This final rule is, I think, much softer than people expected. That meaning that, like I said, the odds of you getting penalized are pretty darn low. But if you do get penalized, the odds of that penalty being pretty big is pretty high. I think from what we see from our clients is this has been a catalyst for taking compliance seriously. to making sure that their I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, that they've got processes and systems in place to make sure that they're doing this right. I can also tell your listeners that this will affect settlements, I think. And I think the way it'll affect settlements is I think you're going to find that the payers, that the insurers, the self-insured entities, they're going to take all aspects of compliance more seriously than they have in the past. We've already seen that. And they will not budge on these things because they can't, because it's become a priority to them. So those would be my big takeaways.
Okay. Greg Bashaw from CP Resolutions. May the odds be ever in your favor, if I can quote Hunger Games, with this new Medicare civil money penalties. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Great. Thanks for having me.
If you're a fan of Ring the Radio, be sure to like and subscribe to the show on all major podcast platforms and follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook. We'd also like to thank our Ringler Radio sponsors, American General Life Company, MetLife, Mutual of Omaha, New York Life, Pacific Life, Prudential, and USAA. To learn more about best practices in comprehensive settlement planning, contact your local Ringler consultant by locating them at www.ringlerassociates.com.
Ringler Radio is a production of Ringler Associates. All of the opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not represent any legal, tax, or financial advice from Ringler Associates. For more information about how to work with Ringler, visit www.ringlerassociates.com.